meeting basically started because we had a group called the Orthodox Group, which is a group of from doctors basically for all different specialties. This topic actually has come up multiple times on our chat about mitzitzah b'peh and halacha in terms of, you know, how it's viewed, what is considered mitzitzah b'peh, and all the different angles and that this shaila has. So without any further ado, we are privileged to have Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt, who is, besides the Rav of Young Israel Woodmere, he's also an infectious disease expert for the Mount Sinai School of Medicine, as well as an administrator in South Nassau University Medical Center. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure to be here. And Orthodox is a very wonderful group. It has a tremendous potential to do good. And sometimes it can be used as an opportunity for both halachic as well as medical education. And it's my pleasure to speak tonight about this. I want it to be interactive, so there is a chat that people can bring forward questions to, and I will try to answer them as time allows, and as well as I'm able to in the course of the talk, and then there'll be some time for questions afterwards. So I want to start off really and talk about, I call this conceptions or ideas and misconceptions, ideas about both halachic and medical aspects of neonatal herpes and mitzitzah b'peh. This is a extremely emotional subject. People get very, very, very strong opinions about this. And if it's all l'shem shamayim, that's fine. Unfortunately, sometimes the rhetoric and the anger and the conversation becomes not something that's l'shem shamayim. So what I really wanted to do today was both look at first the medical knowledge that we have about what causes neonatal herpes encephalitis, and how that does or does not relate to mitzitzah b'peh, when define what mitzitzah b'peh is, and then talk about what the halacha says about mitzitzah b'peh. So it's a lot of things to do, but Mirtz Hashem, we'll get through it in a relatively short period of time. I want to leave enough time for questions. This is not going to be the comprehensive one talk for hours and hours, but we'll try to go through the Rashi Prakim, the highlights, and provide significant background. So first and foremost, let's understand what neonatal herpes simplex infection is. This is a very serious infection. It unfortunately can be a fatal infection. It occurs in men and women. If you look at some statistics, and I'm not going to pass out papers, but I just want you to be aware of what the incidence is in different parts of the United States with and without significant Orthodox populations that practice mitzitzah b'peh. So data, surprisingly, is not that recent. Most of the data is from maybe 10, 15 years ago. So the incidence in the United States in a CDC paper that was published in Pediatrics in 2011 showed that roughly the U.S. incidence of neonatal herpes was pretty even across different parts of the country. So in areas where there aren't a lot of Orthodox Jews, as well as in areas where there are a lot of Orthodox Jews. So you see in the South, the rate is 8.9 cases per 100,000 births. In the Northeast, arguably a more Jewish area, the rate was only 8.2 per 100,000 births. So higher rates in the South than in the Northeast. In the Midwest, again, not another area that is known for a predominantly Orthodox Jewish population, the rate was 12.9 per 100,000 births. So these rates were found to be the same for black, white, and Hispanic newborns, essentially, although there were some differences not felt to be statistically significant. This is found in men and in women. So clearly, neonatal herpes simplex infection in the newborn is a serious, albeit somewhat uncommon infection, serious because it does carry a significant morbidity and even, unfortunately, mortality, although those figures are improving. The mortality rates have improved over time as well. It's critically important to remember that this disease is seen in women. In the New York City Department of Health 2012 MMWR report, which sparked a lot of the controversy about mitzitzah b'peh, so they had, during a period of 5-year times, 84 laboratory-confirmed cases of neonatal herpes. 45 of those 84 were in men, and 39 of those 84 were in women. Not statistically a significant difference. Now, let's state from the outset that neonatal herpes cannot come via mitzitza bepeh in the female population. And the majority of those male cases were also not even in people who underwent circumcision necessarily, and certainly were not in Orthodox patients who underwent mitzitza bepeh, which I still haven't fully defined, but I will. So it's clear, and it must be certainly scientifically understood, that neonatal herpes does occur regardless, totally unrelated to both bris milah and mitzitza bepeh. So this is something that is a clear-cut fact, and the vast majority of cases of neonatal herpes are not found post-mitzitza bepeh. That's a very important fact to remember. This has been confirmed in numerous subsequent case series as well. There was one published in the journal STD in August of 21, which looked at, again, about 1,200 cases of neonatal herpes simplex infection, and they had 47.6% of those cases occurring in women and 52.4% of those cases occurring in men. And the postulated theory as to how these occur is they occur either during the time of birth as the baby passes through the vaginal canal. There may be latent herpes simplex infection, either type 1 or type 2. Many of these cases are type 2, which again is not the issue in the cases of the herpes simplex transmission that has been associated with, but not causally proven to have been associated with mitzitza bepeh. And certainly post-birth, coming into contact with the secretions of herpes, maybe in the mouth or in the hands of a caretaker, or in some cases of a twin. There have been cases of one twin getting it and then the other twin getting it subsequently, as well as potential other routes of infection. So clearly, the vast majority of neonatal herpes simplex cases in the United States are not at all related to both bris milah and certainly not to mitzitza bepeh. Those are scientific facts. They're incontrovertible. And in the general overall context of this discussion, those facts need to be understood. That's, again, I don't think controversial at all. Now, what is mitzitza bepeh? So we will go through different halachic definitions of mitzitza bepeh. And one has to remember, this is a halachic argument. It's not an emotional argument. It's not a you're a baby killer type of argument, as people sometimes get very emotional and they get very vitriolic. This is a argument in the Beis Medrash, and it needs to be carried out halacha lemaisa based upon your local Orthodox Rav, your posek, as to whether it should or should not be done. Because as I will show you, there are different opinions as to whether it should or should not be done. And in a statement which I drafted for the RCA about 17 years ago, that point was a critical point, and that is that there are different halachic opinions and that every person should respect other halachic opinions that are done by very great poskim, even though they may not be your great posek and may differ from your great posek. This works both ways. For those that advocate for doing mitzitza bepeh, bepeh mamish, which I'll explain, those that advocate doing mitzitza bepeh, but not bepeh mamish, because that's really what the halachic controversy goes around. So what is mitzitza bepeh? So the Gemara in Shabbos, and I'll try not to go through too many halachic sources, but I do need to go through some of them. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuflam and Gimel Amud Beis tells us the source of mitzitza bepeh. Amar Rapapa says, Hay umna. Umna is the language we use for the professional, the artisan, in this case, the moel. Umna can be a phlebotomist, umna can be a doctor, umna can be other professionals at various times. It means the professional doing the item at hand, which in this case is the bris milah. So hay umna, that moel, here it means the moel, delo mayitz, that does not do mitzitza. Now, it doesn't say mitzitza bepeh. That's the crux of the controversy. It says that moel that doesn't do mayitz. The word mayitz is a controversial word, what it exactly means. I will still explain it, but in a moment. So that moel that does not do this mitzitza, sakonahu, he's putting the baby at risk. He's putting the baby in danger. And therefore, the avrinon lei, you take away his license to practice bris milah. You remove him from doing bris milah. Now, to contrast that with the Gemara that says, if a moel doesn't do priya, which is an essential part of the bris milah, it says that you need to do another bris milah. the bris mila doesn't count. So priya, which is separating basically the tissues, the various layers of the arla from the skin of the gid itself. So if you don't do that priya, then you didn't do a bris mila. Mol velo para, not a kosher bris mila. As opposed to the language that the Gemara says, if you did not do mitzitza, lo mayitz, if you didn't do whatever this mitzitza actually is, so then we withdraw your license to do bris mila, but we do not say that the bris mila is not kosher. That's what the Gemara says. Again, I'm trying to be as fair and as straightforward in this in describing this halachic discussion. So the Gemara uses the word mayitz. What does the word mayitz mean? So this is controversial. There are opinions that say that mayitz implies mitzitza bepeh. It must be direct suction with the mouth on the area where the bris mila was done. And there are great, great poskim that insist that this is an absolute requirement of bris mila. So much so that there are poskim that say that this is a halacha lemoshe misinai. Amongst them, for example, is the Chelkas Yaakov. This is Rav Mordechai Breisch Zatzal. He was the Dayan in Switzerland. And he writes, Mitzitza bepeh lidas kama hi mitzvah de oraisa. So they classify doing mitzitza, direct oral suctioning on the area of the mila, where the arla was cut off, is, according to these poskim, a mitzvah de oraisa. Uvechol ofen al kopachos mitzvah de rabbanan. And at least doing it in some form is at least a mitzvah de rabbanan. The Mishnah Halachos, the Ungva Rebbe, Rav Menashe Klein Zatzal, he passed away a couple of years ago. He's a gadol in Brooklyn. He wrote, Mitzitza bepehu halacha lemoshe misinai. He says that this is a halacha lemoshe misinai. If you hold that this is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and there are others that hold this way also, I'm just giving you a sample of some of the more contemporary poskim, but there are earlier poskim that hold this way as well. So if you hold that this is a mitzvah d'oraisa or a halacha lemoshe misinai, then you don't have as much room or leeway to play with this as if you say, based upon the Gemara, that it's purely a sakana. And there are poskim that disagree with this opinion that it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, and they say that this was something that was considered to be the state of the art at the times of the Gemara. And already the poskim have told us many times that we cannot practice medicine from the Gemara. The Gemara is not telling us what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us on Har Sinai as to what the practice of medicine is. It's telling us what the state of the art was in the academies of Nardoi and Pumbedisa, the medical academies in those places. So they practiced medicine in a certain way, and the Gemara discusses that. And we don't poskin like that, and we're not allowed to poskin like the Gemara, the medicine that's described in the Gemara for various reasons. And that's also not something that's controversial. That is, you know, an absolute fact. We don't poskin like the medicine based upon the Gemara. Now, there are those that bring down the Rambam. And the Rambam states that if a person doesn't do the bris mila with mitzitza, so you have to go and remove such a person. And this is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch. And they say, motzitzin b'mila, you have to do this mitzitza when you do a bris mila, ad sheyetze hadam mehamakomos horichokim. That's quoted by the Rambam and brought down by the Tur and in Shulchan Aruch. So a person must do this mitzitza, which again we'll describe as some sort of a sucking or withdrawing of the blood from distant places. And if you don't do that, then you got a problem. Now, this was the way mitzitza was done, bepeh mamish, for literally thousands of years. So why is there any controversy of late? So this really started, get a little history lesson here, in the early to middle 1800s in Europe, when there were a number of outbreaks on Jewish populations of what they thought was either syphilis or tuberculosis. But that's because they didn't know and understand that there could be viral particles such as herpes simplex, which can only be seen with electron microscopy, which was not available. They only had standard abilities to look at under a microscope, and therefore they were not aware of viruses. And while they may have postulated that thus things existed, there was no proof. So they actually thought that there was outbreaks of syphilis in these Jewish babies, and in the context of the time, that was a very serious concern. And in fact, there were many Reformed Jewish communities that wanted to ban Bris Milah. And there were certain governments and secular organizations and secular groups that wanted to ban Bris Milah, never mind Metzitza B'peh, because of this concern that it was a cause of transmission of illness. And in 1837, in Vienna, there was such an outbreak in the Jewish community, and the government was discussing banning Bris Milah. When they looked into it, however, and there were physicians that looked into it, they seemed to recommend and associate this with the practice of Metzitza B'peh. And the question thus was posed to the Rav of Vienna, Rabbi Eliezer Horowitz, the Yad Eliezer, a great Talmud Chacham, as to whether they could dispense with the doing of Metzitza B'peh Mamish, direct physical suctioning. Is there an alternative that could be done? And in fact, the Yad Eliezer, who is a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, had a series of correspondence letters, which we have, between the Yad Eliezer, Rabbi Horowitz, and the Chasam Sofer, the great Chasam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, who was the Gadol Hador. And Rabbi Eliezer Horowitz was a Talmud of his. And between 1837 and 1845, there was a series of correspondence where Rabbi Eliezer Horowitz, the Yad Eliezer, asked, is it acceptable to use a form of suction, not B'peh, but to use some sort of a compression with a sponge, a svug of some nature that would also suck out the, quote, dead humors or whatever it was they thought that the Metzitza actually accomplished in removing, to bring out, as the Rambam says, the blood from Mimakomos or Rechokin, and that would keep the baby healthy. And the physicians of that time stated that this type of suctioning was more effective in doing this removal of the whatever it was they were trying to remove, sucking out the blood or the infection or whatever it was they thought that they were removing. They felt that it was more effective than doing Metzitza B'peh Mamish. So the Yad Eliezer paskened that you can replace Metzitza B'peh Mamish with this suctioning with a svug, not with a pipette, not with the mouth, but with a sponge type of an arrangement of pressure and suctioning. And the Chasam Sofer, not known to be a leftist rabbi, the Chasam Sofer paskened that you are in fact allowed to do this. And hence, we have the controversy. Was the Chasam Sofer's psak a horas shah, a one-time psak for that area because they were going to potentially, Rachmana Litzlan, stop Bris Milah entirely and not allow Jewish babies to have a Bris Milah? Or was this a halachic statement that he felt that Metzitza B'peh Mamish is not in fact something that is essential to the Bris Milah? So, let's jump to the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah lived a couple of years after that. The Mishnah Berurah is written in the late 1800s, very early 1900s. And what does the Mishnah Berurah say about this? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Yad Eliezer. And he quotes his major adversary, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, who lived around that same time, who was also Talmud of Chasam Sofer. And he strongly disagreed with the Psak of the Yad Eliezer and said that the Chasam Sofer only made his psak as a hora shah under extenuating circumstances and only for the people of Vienna and only for that time when they were talking about stopping Bris Milah, never mind Metzitza B'peh. And this machlokas between the Binyan Sion and the Yad Eliezer is codified in the Bir Halacha in Simon Shin Lamed Aleph, where if you look in the Bir Halacha Dibra Maskul Porin Umotzitzin, he says, Ayin B'tshuvas Binyan Sion. Now, it's interesting, Rav Ozner Zatzal points out, he's a Pella here on the Mishnah Berurah, who's the author of the Bir Halacha, and he says, why did he quote the Binyan Sion first and seem to say that the Yad Eliezer disagrees with him? It was the other way around. The Yad Eliezer really comes first, and the Binyan Sion argued with the Yad Eliezer. In any event, the Yad Eliezer. So in any event, The Tshuvas Bin Yitzchak is quoted first, and he writes, Da Metzitza Dafko Bepeh. Because this is their opinion, that the word Metzitza with two tzadis means sucking via the mouth directly. And therefore, Velo Al Yidei Dover Acher Shimtziu Harofim Achadoshim. These newfangled doctors, not the Orthodox, the old newfangled doctors, they felt that in fact Mitzitza Bepeh could be replaced with a sfug, a sponge. Subsequently, in the late 1880s and 1890s, they came up with the idea of a pipette, which is what modern Moalim who don't do Mitzitza Bepeh mamish on the area of the Arla, but do Mitzitza Bepeh through a pipette used. That was only discovered or used for the first time in the 1880s, 1890s, I think, in Germany first, and then it spread. So the Binyan Sion, the Tshuvas Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettinger, so he writes, absolutely not allowed. And then the Bia Halacha quotes Ubitshuvas Yad Elazar. He quotes Rabbi Eliezer Harwitz, the Rav of Vienna, who was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, and he writes, Matir Limtzos Bisfug. The Yad Eliezer, the Yad Elazar, he allows you to do Mitzitza, requires Mitzitza, but it says it's acceptable to do with a sponge, not even Bepeh at all. With a sponge, and he says, and this is the Chafetz Chaim, the Biduka, because it was checked out, scientifically tested, the Yosef Tovi Mitzitza Bepeh, because it functions better than Mitzitza Bepeh. And you're even allowed to do this on Shabbos. The Afilu B'Shabbos, Yishlahati B'Sfug, you wouldn't be allowed to do this if you weren't accomplishing anything, because it would be an issur of drawing blood on Shabbos. And therefore, it obviously, halachically, is acceptable. And this is the conclusion of the Bir Halacha, the Chafetz Chaim. And therefore, he seems to indicate that the Yad Elazar is taking his opinion over the Binyan Tzion, albeit the Chafetz Chaim, the Mishnah Berurah, brings both opinions down. So this is an age-old machlokas for almost 200 years now as to what the halacha is based upon this series of conversations, written piskei halacha from the Yad Elazar to his Rebbe, the Chasam Sofer, and back. And I want to read to you what some of the poskim say about this. So the Sefer Yehuda Yalep, he writes, Al pi hasod. Now we introduce Kabbalistic ideas. Mitzitza bepeh vadei mitzvah. So now we introduce a whole area that we haven't talked about yet. Until now it's been pretty halachic. But now we introduce Kabbalistic ideas. And he says, Al pi hasod. Through non-scientific and non-halachic ways, but through the sod, through Kabbalistic ideas, it's a chova. And he brings down from the Eshel Avram that he says, Miguf Iker Mitzvahs Mila Hu. It is an essential part of the Bris Mila. And some say this is the Hatofas Dam Bris. When a person is born without an Arla, or a person who had a circumcision done with, and that is a Bris Mila, and then when he gets older, he realizes he never had a Bris Mila, and they do just Hatofas Dam Bris because the Arla is not there. So this Hatofas Dam Bris, he says that's accomplished by Mitzitza. And they hold that it is an essential part. The Mishnah Lachos, I mentioned before, the Ungva Rebbe, Rabbi Klein, Zatzal, he writes, Levatel mitzvah derabbanon b'fahesya. He says, even if you want to hold it's only a mitzvah derabbanon, but to suddenly dispense with a mitzvah that's been a mitzvah derabbanon for thousands of years, and he says, even ayidei rabbonim shomrei Torah, even though the people that are dispensing with this are erlucha rabbonim, he says, Hayishama kazos? Could such a thing possibly be happening? Rabbi Seinu Chachmi Yashas Hu Yubakim Umuchukamim Yosemihem. The rabbis of the Gemara also knew this, and yet they felt that it was essential to do this. And the Binyan Sion said that there's Ein Biyodeinu Levatel Metzitza Bepeh. Impossible to go and dispense with this. That's one side of the argument. That's a very important side of the argument. What's the other side of the argument that we can dispense with Mitzitza Bepeh? And this is not a Haredi versus modern Orthodox. This is essentially a machlokus between Rav Chaim Brisker, the Briskers, and the Binyan Tzion, and other poskim of that background of the Binyan Tzion. And I want to read to you a statement that Rav Shechter Shlita quotes in the Nefesh HaRav, a very famous statement that he quotes from the Bris of Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld, Shlita, who just retired as the rabbi of the Young Israel of Kew Garden Hills, which my good friend Dr. Yosef Kaplowitz occasionally davens in that shul. Young Israel Kew Garden Hills is a major mecca for Judaism in Queens, in the United States, and the rav of that shul was, until very recently, Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld, Shlita. And his father before him, the great Rabbi Shraga Feivel, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, unfortunately says that Sally passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. He was the rav there for many, many years. And Rabbi Yoel's bris, Rabbi Yoel is now 70 years old, Rabbi Yoel's bris took place in the Young Israel of Kew Gardens Hills when Rabbi Schoenfeld was a young rabbi there. And listen to what Rabbi Schoenfeld, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Zatzal, told Rav Herschel Schechter, Shlita, and the Rav, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, was at that bris. And I quote to you from the Nefesh HaRav, it's a short quote. He brings down, V'sipra lanu, Rabbi Schoenfeld told Rabbi Schechter, Pamachas, rotza hamor lasos metzitza bepeh. Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Zatzal, had Hasidish of blood. He was a Gera Chassid. And his custom was to do mitzitza bepeh mamish. Ubikesh Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, begged him not to. Bikesh Rabbeinu mimenu shelo yase, please don't do this. However, kishivtzra moil badaber, the moil was a chasidish moil, and he said, we do mitzitza bepeh mamish. So Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik said, Ilu hoya oviv hagon Rav Moshe Soloveitchik nochach. If my father, his heiliger father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, had been present, lo hoya minicho klal lasos hametzitza bepeh bishum ofen. The briskers have a tradition that it's dangerous and absolutely forbidden to do metzitza bepeh mamish. But the Rav said, ani ma'od tolerant. I'm a very tolerant person. Nu, veyosha tomav tzirko kach anichecha. You want to do it, Mr. Moyle? Gizun te, hey, go and do metzitza bepeh mamish. Kach state, Rav Schechter, Shlita, in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, as told by Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Zatzal, on the bris of his son, Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld. So there's a great list of brisker dynasty going back to Rav Chaim, who did not allow metzitza bepeh, based upon the idea that there is a sakana. Now, how much of a sakana is there? And that's now getting back to the final medical part of this talk. Is there, in fact, causality to show that metzitza bepeh mamish causes, critical where there, causes, proof that it causes herpes simplex in the neonate that you do metzitza bepeh mamish on? So, there had been always, since about late 1998 or so, a case report or two here or there, and then they published two case reports with the same mile. And then subsequently, there have been a number of other cases. There probably are now maybe 15 to 20 published cases. I lose track already, because every couple of years, they come out with, we have another case. But it's not every year, and it's reportable. Now, I know people will argue that some cases aren't being reported. Firm doctors may not report some of these cases. At the same time, there are only a slight handful of cases that have been reported in the last 20 years. Now, even one case, if it's caused because of metzitza bepeh mamish, is something that needs to be discussed and understood within the halachic framework as well as the medical framework. And I will give you eitzes to decrease that rate if it is true from a medical point of view, which, of course, everybody from a halachic point of view would recommend and want to do. So, has there ever been a case proven, how do I define proof, where the DNA from the moel agreed with the DNA that was identified from the baby's herpes? And the answer to that is never. There is not one single case in Eretz Yisrael or here where they have DNA from the moel, and that is the same DNA, same genetic sequence in the baby. If you look at the statistical analysis, it is somewhat controversial as to whether there truly is an increased rate or not. And depending on how you do the stats, there was one case, as I mentioned, with a twin. If you remove the twin case, which is, again, very likely that it could easily be cross-contamination between the caregivers of the first twin who had it And then if the second twin gets it, even though they both have mitzitza b'peh, there certainly is a rational scientific argument to be made that it was far more likely that the caregivers going from one baby to the other as they diaper them, or just from contact between any of the caregivers and the babies themselves, could easily have transferred it not via mitzitza b'peh mamish. So if you remove that second twin from the statistical analysis, then again, it's very much more skeptical that there is even a association. So what is my professional opinion as somebody who's looked at all of these cases, at these published cases, and analyzed them? So my answer is that there is no definitive proof that mitzitza b'peh mamish causes herpes simplex, both in the genital area and then never could cause encephalitis. However, I cannot exclude that that's a possibility. And therefore, when I helped author the paper for the RCA, and with the psak of Rav Willich Shlita and Rav Shechta Shlita, based upon the Briska dynasty and many, many others, who said that one should not do mitzitza b'peh mamish, so the official recommendation of my rabbeim is that you do mitzitza b'peh via a pipette without doing it mamish, with direct suctioning of the mouth, with the potential for having in the saliva or in the mouth secretions some viral DNA, even though there's no source present, but still could have secretion of virus that could potentially contaminate the baby's genital area where you do the mitzitza b'peh. But if you do it via pipette, that risk is zero. Scientifically, there's no connection, there's no transmission possibility, and that would reduce the risk to zero, and yet still accomplish, according to the halachic imperative of those that say you must do mitzitza b'peh. But again, very controversial whether it has to be b'peh mamish. So you have advocates that it must be b'peh mamish. You have advocates that it doesn't have to be. The Gemara does not state b'peh mamish. It just says mayitz. And therefore, there are those that advocate halachically, l'chatchila, it is perfectly acceptable to do it via a pipette, which would be the standard way that people do mitzitza, not b'peh mamish, b'peh but not b'peh mamish, on the gid of the baby. And this would fulfill, even if you say there's a requirement of mitzitza, this would fulfill it l'chatchila. So you have these two primary schools of halachic thought. If you have to do mitzitza, b'peh mamish, and there hasn't been shown to be a causal relationship, or even if there is, but it's extremely low. And as I'll now tell you, there are ways to make that risk even lower. So therefore, they are of the thought, and they are of the opinion, that one must do mitzitza b'peh mamish. And the school of thought that says it's perfectly l'chatchila acceptable to do mitzitza b'peh without being mamish on the gid, but through a pipette, so they would say that it is forbidden to do mitzitza b'peh mamish, because why do something that's risky if there's no halachic imperative to do so? So I want to conclude with just one or two more ideas that are brought down by the poskim. And this tshuva that I'm going to read to you from the Shevet Halevi is very, very interesting. Shevet Halevi was Rav Ozner, Zatzal. He passed away about 5-10 years ago in Eretz Yisrael. He was the Dayan, and the Eidah Haredis, a great, great Talmud Chacham, who wrote a series of Svarim, the Shevet Halevi, and other Svarim. And he writes, he says, the Chasam Sofer, Ani Re'isiv, Lifnei Kama Shonim B'London. I myself, the Shevet Halevi says, I saw those correspondences between the Yad Elazar and the Chasam Sofer. That's where they were, in London. V'ayukosuv shom bitzad me'echad mitalmidei Ksav Sofer. One of the Chasam Sofer's sons was the Ksav Sofer, and his Talmidim, the Ksav Sofer's Talmidim, hand wrote on the side of the tshuva. And they said that this was only a Horoah Shah and Osul Farsimo. Now, Chasam Sofer didn't write that. The Ksav Sofer didn't write that. Some Talmidim of the Ksav Sofer wrote that. That's to be taken as face value. And he says, Chasam Sofer, they wrote on the side, Chasam Sofer, lo kosu lefarsam, ela lahoroas shah ki yadua, that that was a one-time dispensation, but not to be publicized and not to be generalized. And he brings down the Binyan Tzion, which we mentioned before. He argues with the Yad Eliezer. He calls him Hagoin Baal Yad Eliezer. So sometimes he's called Eliezer, sometimes he's called Elazar. Hagoyin, he calls him Hagoyin. The Shevet HaLevi, to call somebody Hagoyin is very impressive, but he says he's wrong. And he says, I'm surprised that the Hagadol HaTzadik, Baal Mishneh Berurah, he put the Binyan Sion first, and he put the Yad Eliezer after. He says that's the wrong order. In any event, he writes, Miyu, Vadai, B'mokom Sheish Chashash, Sha'ideze Yevatlu Mitzvahs Mila Legamre? As strong as he was in saying you should do Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish, he says if there's any concern that it's going to lead to not doing Bris Mila, Mutav Lios Minatznuyin, emotionally dead, back off. Do Mitzitza with a pipette, because there are many, I've had this question asked to me many times by non-religious Jews who are scared about doing a Bris Mila because they heard about this controversy from the Department of Health that when an Orthodox person does a Bris Mila, your baby's going to get herpes encephalitis. So the Shevet HaLevi says, if there's a concern that you won't do a Bris Mila, absolutely don't do Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish. So certainly, if you have a person who doesn't have a strong family tradition to do Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish, and they're nervous about Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish, so then there are great poskim you can rely upon, including great poskim like the Shevet HaLevi, who's strongly in the camp of doing Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish, that say you don't have to do Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish, and that the Bris Mila is a 100% kosher Bris. And listen to what the Shevet HaLevi says to prove to you that it's not ma'akev. In Tshuva, in Reish Yud Dalet, Simen Dalet, he writes, we're normally very machmir to do Mitzitza B'Peh. I won't read you the whole Tshuva. He says, when you're doing a Bris Mila on an adult, right? I've been zocha to be a moel on a number of adult people that had Bris Milas, and to be the sandik, not the moel. I think I said the moel. To be the sandik on adults that had the Bris Mila, and you're talking about a 40-year-old man, a 20-year-old man, an 8-year-old kid. So Rav Osner, Zatzal, writes, Beferish, he says, do Mitzitza not B'Peh Mamish. Now, if this was Aloch L'Moshe B'Sinai, if this was a Chiyav, if this was an absolute Yehari Vayavar, he never would have said that. But he says, absolutely don't do Mitzitza B'Peh on an adult. He says, do B'Ofen Acher. Mestama, he means using a pipette. And he says, V'yesh tamim u'nemukim ein tzarech lefarish. There are reasons for this, deep reasons for this, and I won't go into it. Lanias Dati, what he's saying is it looks inappropriate to have the moel do Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish on an adult gid, on an adult male. So therefore, it can't be in that situation something that we would ask to be done, and therefore we don't do it in that situation. Clearly, it's not a mitzvah, according to the Shevet HaLevi, that is ma'akib if you don't do it. It's not a halacha l'moshe b'sinai, it's not a requirement. Albeit, the Shevet HaLevi says you should do it. So the bottom line is, I do not think there's ever been a case proven. In fact, I'm aware, but it's never been published, which is a tragedy. I'm aware of two cases that were, I believe, in Orange County or in Westchester, where the mole's DNA was taken and identified a strain of herpes that was different than the DNA that was identified in two babies. So that would be conclusive proof that in those two babies, it wasn't from the mole. I have been told this anecdotally. It has not been published. I begged them to publish it, but it hasn't been published. I don't know why. I don't know if it's political. I don't know if it's just not enough data that was collected. But this is what I was anecdotally told. But it's not been published, so I take that the same way that it's never been published that the mole's DNA was present there. But that would be the best argument. And we should all be interested in proving this. If, in fact, the baby, Rahman al-Islam, gets herpes simplex, we should be sampling the moel and see, yes or no, was that the cause or was that not the cause, so we can at least have scientific evidence one way or the other whether that's the cause. And I'll leave you with a quote from Rav Belsky Zatzal. Rav Belsky was a Goyin Olam. He was the posting for the OU with Rav Shechta Shlita, Ibogim Mechaim L'Chaim. And Rav Belsky was a moel, as far as I know. And Rav Belsky writes, this is attributed to one of his Tamidim, who writes, V'agoyin Rav Yisrael Belsky Shlita, Omar Ba'asifa, he once said publicly at some gathering, and I'm quoting to you, why is this terrible crisis? Rav Belsky was alive when the New York City Department of Health came out with all of its new regulations arguing strongly against the performance of Mitzitza B'Peh Mamish. He says, why does this come out now? Yesh achshav tumult. Why? And listen what he says. He says, because they don't do metzitza b'peh seriously. He says, the moilim that do metzitza b'peh, they touch them out there, but they don't really suck out the blood. They don't try to get the dam from the makomos harachokos. And they do a symbolic metzitza b'peh. And he says that has no halachic validity, and that's why there's such a tumult. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochel is upset that they're not doing metzitza b'peh mamish correctly. And that is the Goyin Rebelsky Zatzal's opinion. And he strongly goes on to suggest that if you really want to do metzitza b'peh properly, you have to do it properly. And he says that there are moilim that don't do it. And I will tell you, and this was my final statement, I personally was involved in one of the Beis Dins that looked at this early on in the discussion, in the tumult, as Rebelsky talks to it. And I personally spoke with the mole that was at the center of the controversy. And that mole told me that this is incorrect, because on one of the cases where he, quote, was said that he did metzitza b'peh mamash, he said, I faked it. I didn't do metzitza b'peh. I bent down, but I did not do it. This is what the mole told me, first-hand evidence. The mole told me that there's no way that he could have given that baby herpes simplex because he didn't even do real metzitza b'peh mamash. Now that, in and of itself, is very scary to me, that a mole would not have done what he was supposed to have done. That I leave for a different discussion for another time. But I question, without having proof one way or the other, whether the statistics are truly accurate, saying that there is even an association, and certainly there isn't a causation yet. But my opinion is that it's possible, and therefore, I paskin, like my Rebbeim, Rav Willich Shlita, Rav Shechta Shlita, going after the Brisker dynasty, going after the Yad Eloza, going after the opinion of the Chassam Sofer, and many other Gedolei Yisrael, that Metzitza B'peh can be accomplished with a pipette, and that's the RCA's official position as well. But we all recognize that if you hold like the Binyan Sion, if you hold like Rav Ozna, if you hold like the other great Gedolei Yisrael, then you have a right to do Metzitza B'peh Mamish, and you should do it in the safest way. And the Department of Health itself has come out with guidelines. And another infectious disease doctor wrote up these guidelines. I had the chance to review them and contribute to them a little bit. And there are very simple ways to diminish any potential risk by having the mole gargle with Listerine half an hour before the bris milah and a minute or two before the bris milah. There's studies that show that would decrease the level of DNA present in any secretions, should there be DNA present. And that would, in fact, be a simple way to decrease the likelihood, if there is a risk, of transmitting it. There are those that would recommend just screening to see whether the mole has herpes simplex antibodies. 90% of adult males do. Find yourself the designated motzeitz that doesn't have antibodies, and then the likelihood of that person actually transmitting herpes simplex would be as close to nil as possible. And likewise, every mole should certainly use sterile technique, even though bacterial infections are not considered a problem. And they certainly should inspect their mouth to see if they have any lesions. And a mole who has lesions absolutely should never do metzitza b'peh mamish. And if there's any question, so let the father do the metzitza b'peh mamish. The father doesn't feel comfortable doing it, let another person do the metzitza b'peh. It doesn't have to be done by the mole. So if the mole or anybody that wants to do metzitza b'peh has any sort of lesion in the mouth, it is absolutely incorrect and wrong for them to do the metzitza b'peh. So I went 45 minutes or a little bit less. I think that's more than enough to have broached this subject. I hope it was giving a lot of information on the subject from an unbiased point of view. And I'll be happy to take. I didn't see any questions yet in the chat. So if there is any questions, I'd be happy to listen to them.
I guess I had one question that I was thinking of when I knew the Rebbe was talking on this type of topic. I was thinking about if there was a case where a mole wasn't involved. I mean, it had no causation, but if there was a case where there were infants after metzitza b'peh from a mole, should they take any other extra precautions besides the mouth washing if they're going to continue with metzitza b'peh afterwards?
So if a mole has a history of having mouth lesions, so then they should absolutely inspect themselves before they do metzitza b'peh. If there is a mole that has had a case associated with him, so the simplest answer would be have somebody else do the metzitza b'peh. I would strongly want to see evidence one way or the other. I'm not interested in proving one point versus the other. I'm interested in finding out what the facts are. If every male would be willing to go and give DNA, take the mouth swabs on a serial basis after there was a case reported in a baby having neonatal herpes, and if they ever identified that either same or different lesion in the male's mouth, we would know the answer. It is or is not possibly transmitted via this mechanism, and we could either shut down this entire controversy, or then we have a halachic decision to make. Now there is proof that it can be caused. Again, my gut opinion, and I think most physicians will tell you, we would never put our mouths to the wound after a colorectal surgery. We wouldn't go and suck on the wound of a gallbladder incision. So none of us would believe that this is something that scientifically makes sense. And anybody that argues that the Gemara is telling us that this is the scientific state of the art, that's not the way the Gemara works. Now, there are great poskim that say, the Gemara says it's a sakana, but we don't know how it's a sakana, and that's why we still have to do mitzitza bepeh, albeit maybe bepeh with a pipette and not bepeh mamish. So I'm not in any way dismissing the Gemara. There are opinions that want to suggest that the Gemara only recommends it if we can prove that it's sakana, and if you could theoretically say it's not a sakana, we dispense with it, but that is not the opinion of any posek today. So every posek today says do either mitzitza bepeh mamish, or do mitzitza bepeh via a pipette. There's nobody that says dispense with mitzitza bepeh from the great poskim of Klal Yisrael.
And I could also echo that I was actually in camp with Rav Belsky doing a bris, and I saw him do mitzitza bepeh mamish. Like I said, I don't see any questions. I mean, if there are questions, people could type into the question answer chat that we do have available. I guess we'll give them another, I guess, 2-3 minutes to see if anyone has anything. If not, then we'll go from there.
Well, I thank you all for listening. I thank you for hopefully being better educated on the subject and be willing to ask any questions in the future to me as well. So I see a question in the chat. I'm concerned that herpes may have been transmitted via mitzitza pet to babies, but DNA testing was not performed. So that is the concern. That is exactly the concern. I think it would be in the best interest of everybody. But unfortunately, people get very defensive. A male doesn't want to be the first person proven to be the cause of neonatal herpes. They're worried about being sued, I would guess. They're worried about all sorts of other ramifications. I understand that. But we are people that are interested in MS. And it's very difficult to poskim if you don't know all the facts. So I think it would be very helpful if there were. And I know that there are cases that are probably not being reported to the Department of Health, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that they were from mitzitza bepeh. As I pointed out, many, many, many cases occur in women where there's no bris milah. And the majority of cases in men are without bris milah and or certainly without mitzitza bepeh. And if you give the father to do this, well, it might also be dangerous. I would suggest if you are doing somebody other than the MOA, pick somebody that doesn't have antibodies to herpes simplex. About 10% of the adult population would not have antibodies to herpes simplex. That would imply that they've never been exposed. And theoretically, if they have no lesions in their mouth and don't have a current episode, would probably be at a much lower risk. And again, if you rinse your mouth out well with Listerine right prior to the actual bris milah and the mitzitza, so studies have shown that you decrease or dilute any virus that may be there. Again, it's a relatively short period of time, and the likelihood, I think, of such transmission has to be viewed in the view of it being an extremely rare event, as evidenced by the number of cases. There's a tremendous amount of mitzitza going on. Baruch Hashem, kein yirbu, that we should have so many babies born, and we don't, Baruch Hashem, see a tremendous number of cases of herpes simplex encephalitis. It's impossible to hide a case of herpes simplex encephalitis. Every one of those babies gets admitted. You can hide some of the local, Baruch Hashem, relatively minor skin lesions that may come up. They could be theoretically hidden, but they are required to be reported, and I would strongly urge that people do report them. But at the same time, we're not seeing a huge outbreak in the Frum communities of herpes simplex encephalitis, which is the real concern here. In terms of the size of the pipette, there is no size. What they recommend is you actually put in a piece of a cloth, a little sponge, a little piece of tissue, something to absorb any blood coming up or any saliva going down. So there's a blockage. It's a physical blockage, but you can still accomplish the suction. This was a great question that came up during COVID. There were those advocating banning bris milah during COVID. Baruch Hashem, I was able to prevent that from happening. We got together with a number of other ID doctors and a number of rabbanim, and there was a strong push to try to ban bris milah because of the concern of transmitting to the baby. So there was one ma who was able to show that he could do adequate suctioning through his mask, and he was able to actually accomplish metitza bepeh through the pipette while he was wearing a mask. And again, some bris milahs were postponed because of active COVID, but not because of the theoretical risk. And Baruch Hashem, I'm not aware of any cases that occurred of COVID transmitted from bris milah. I think that addresses all of the questions in the chat right now. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to take
them. There was one other one that I see.
The pipette size. So I addressed that. I don't...
No, there's one. Right, there's one underneath there.
I have to scroll down. I'm sorry. Have there ever been any documented of AIDS or Hep B or C transmission via metitza bepeh? No, to my knowledge, no. In fact, the original concerns were all for the moel. The original concerns were that the moel would get this. And when HIV first came out in the early 80s, it was a tremendous concern amongst the moelim to do bris milah on people that didn't look and sound like Shomer Torah Mitzvah's people because of the concern that they could transmit it. But I'm not aware of any cases where that's been transmitted. Now, there are a number of cases in healthcare professionals of unfortunately acquiring HIV, and certainly Hep B was extremely commonly acquired prior to vaccination in the middle 80s, early 90s, when Hep B vaccination came out. There were numerous dentists and people that did operations in the pelvic and abdominal cavities, when they would get stuck with needles, there was a very high risk of transmission of Hep B to surgeons and to dentists especially. So that absolutely can occur. But via bris milah, I'm not aware. Is there any danger to moel from the baby? I'm not sure what that question means. The moel, if he's coming into contact with the baby's blood, would theoretically be coming into contact with whatever risk of contagion is in the baby's blood. We would normally not recommend that any healthcare professional come into direct contact with a patient's blood. So I do recommend that we follow normal sterile procedure in doing a bris milah. Whether you're doing metitza bepeh mamash or not, you should certainly limit any contact with potential contagion. But Baruch Hashem bli ayin hara, in most babies that where metitza bepeh is being considered, the likelihood of that baby having a serious transmissible infection is Baruch Hashem low. I think I got all the questions. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And hopefully Metz Hashemi could do more such Torah topics in the future.
Okay, it would be my pleasure. I'll just put in one plug. I give a yahrzeit shiur for my father, so I wanted to dedicate this shiur Le'ilui Nishmas, my father, Yosef Nissan Yecheskel's yahrzeit is coming up on Yud Nissan, and I'll be giving a shiur about something to say at the Seder. At our shul, a live shiur. There'll be a recording of it eventually for people that are far away, but everybody's invited to come to my shul. I think the date is March 29th at the Yom Yisrael of Woodmere. Very, hopefully, pleasant and enjoyable shiur on something to say at the Seder, all about non-medical issues, just about Baruch Hashem, beautiful Seder, halachos, and perushim on the Seder.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good night, everybody. Thank you for listening. And thank you, Orthodox, for putting this together.